AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment. Your time to shine. Your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.
Hello, this is Christian Bush, and welcome to episode 5 of Geeking Out, my new podcast. Every episode is a new person talking about what they're obsessed with that has nothing to do with their job. The only requirement is that they're totally geeking out on it and they want to talk about it. From homemade bamboo furniture to secret pimento cheese recipes, from Disney princess collections to Doctor Who Lego sets. From your favorite Netflix binge snack to internet tracking great white sharks, tell me what you love, why you love it, how you got into it, and what makes it awesome. Every episode's presented in 3 chapters. Chapter 1, my guest and I talk about what they're obsessed with. Chapter 2 is a game I call Trajan, where my guest and I turn each other on to one thing that we've discovered. And Chapter 3 closes the show with me talking about music that I'm currently geeking out on and why. I believe that curiosity is contagious and that life is better with a soundtrack. So let's go. Chapter 1. Today's guest is Will Stegman. Will is a professional businessman with a normal person job, who I met because he's good friends with my manager, Whitney. Will lives with his wife, Nina, and their pit bull, Olive, in Los Angeles, California. Whitney and I met up with him on a rooftop in Westwood last fall, so you're going to hear the occasional traffic helicopter overhead as we talk.
So introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Will Stegman.
Will, tell us what you do for a living.
I work for a very big corporation that you probably do business with in some way, shape, or form. And what I officially do there probably doesn't matter to anyone listening to this right now. Not to be mysterious, but I work a regular office job. I do a regular 9-to-5. I work in customer experience, I guess is the umbrella that it fits under. And I am, I should say, reluctantly geeked out and obsessed with a musician from my hometown. I grew up on Long Island. I grew up about 20 minutes from where Billy Joel grew up. And I, for a very long time, wanted nothing to do with the guy. Like, I grew up, it was so, like, he was our Springsteen. He was our local hero. Like, in my memory, the local radio station would play Piano Man at 9 o'clock every Saturday night. Like, it was just the thing that we did. And everybody loved him. Everybody knew somebody who knew somebody who knew him.
And he lived there?
He lived there. Even, he had a place in New York City, he had a place in Miami, and he still had a place on Long Island. You could see him in restaurants all the time. He was just part of the local fabric, and I wanted zero to do with it. Now, So I grew up there. I lived there for the first almost 25 years of my life. And just before I turned 25, I picked up my stuff and I moved away to where we are now.
Where are we now, actually?
We are now in Los Angeles.
Specifically, we are on a roof, right?
Yes, and I don't live on this roof. Like, your listeners, should know, like, I'm not homeless. I have a roof. But when I would tell people where I was from, everyone would always ask, like, oh, you're from Long Island. Oh, like Billy Joel. You must love him. I'm like, nope, in fact, I don't. And then I would tell people that every year I would make a New Year's resolution. And it was January 1st, we're going to go through this whole year without ever hearing a single Billy Joel song. It's like, I started this when I was still living on Long Island, which meant I failed every year. But from like 1996 on, it's like, this year, no Billy Joel. We're not going to go places where we think we're going to hear him, which was nowhere. Like, maybe I go to a hospital. But there was a good chance, like, if you're at a hospital, you're still going to hear, like, Uptown Girl while you're, you know...
in the waiting room.
Right. It's inescapable. So I would every year do it, and then, like, I would be on the 4th of January sitting in a diner, and all of a sudden you hear, you know, Downeaster Alexa playing over the diner jukebox at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you're like, what is going wrong with my life that, like, I can't avoid this guy that I just... It wasn't personal. I didn't know him. I just thought everything that he stood for and believed in and everyone who enjoyed him and his work was dumb. That's all. A light.
Dumb.
Dumb.
Just straight dumb.
Just didn't know a thing. So I spend 15 years vowing every year to not hear Billy Joel. I moved to Los Angeles where I feel like, oh, probably going to hear less of him there. Not the case. Every year, he would pop up, usually within the first 60 days of the year. I would call and be put on hold, and there would be like a Muzak version of, you know, Always a Woman. And I'm like, bastard got me again. Like, every year, that sneaky Long Island bastard would nail me. So, 2012 rolls around. And in 2012, I am, how old am I then? I am 37. And, you know, I got a job, I'm married, I'm doing well, I'm a different person than the kid who used to sit being angry in diners and cursing Billy Joel on Long Island, but I still won't listen to the guy. So, 2012, it's New Year's Day, and my wife is watching TV, and she says to me, hey, there's this movie on that I think you want to watch. The movie is called Last Play at Shea. Shea Stadium where the New York Mets play. And the other thing that I'm obsessed with is the New York Mets. So my wife sees this and says, oh, Last Play at Shea, that's got to be about the Mets. Let me get my husband in here, who loves the Mets and hates Billy Joel, in this room to watch this. So she flips the channel and I come walking in and I realize, oh, Last Play at Shea is not a movie about the Mets. Last Play at Shea is a Billy Joel concert film. So it's the first day of the year. I'm not even 12 hours into 2012.
And you're a failure.
And I've blown it up. So I decide in that moment, after I storm out, and I'm like, how could you do this to me? Because it was really like that Twilight Zone moment, like, it's a cookbook moment. I'm like, it's not a Mets thing. It's a Billy Joel movie. No. So it's over, and my wife is like, I'm so sorry that I ruined it for you. And I'm like, we're going to regroup. You know what we're going to do this year? We're going to flip this script. I've been putting this off for too long. I'm going to listen to every goddamn song this guy ever wrote, recorded, and released, and I'm going in deep. I'm going to find out, what is it that I don't like about this guy? Why does he set off all of these things in me? And over the course of 2012, I did this thing called A Year of Billy Joel, where I basically dedicated the whole year to just studying Billy Joel's music. And over the course of that year, became just kind of obsessed with it. The music, his story, his upbringing, the sources of his material, his writing process, I became so deep into it that now, what are we, 5 years later, there isn't a day that goes by that somebody doesn't send me a link to something Billy Joel related, or bring something to my attention, like, hey, do you know about this? You should write about this. It's this thing that, like, 5 years ago, just as a joke, I decided to do this, and it's just, it's the thing that people know me for now, as the guy who hated Billy Joel and then decided to give him a try.
And would you say that you love Billy Joel now?
I really enjoy Billy Joel the person. But it's like, I enjoy it when I hear it, but it's not the thing that I seek out, but it seeks me out.
It's like your obsession now is gravity.
Sort of, right. Something. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I'm like in Billy Joel's gravitational orbit. And as much as I try to, like, I can't get away from it. It's like every day somebody sends me something. I hear something, you know, reissues and stuff coming out, or I get into a dispute about something, or someone else is arguing about Billy Joel on the internet, and if I'm within 5,000 miles of that argument, someone's like, oh, talk to Will, he'll settle this for us. So I'm also now the Billy Joel argument settler.
I have done that. It's true. I will tag Will on Facebook if anyone says anything bad about Billy Joel. I'm like, well, I bet Will has something to say about this.
That yes.
I disrupt him.
Judge Will.
Right. So then the other thing is like learning like who all of the other secret Billy Joel fans are. Like people who are like, oh, yeah, it's sort of like my guilty pleasure. And it's like I wouldn't even say that it's my guilty pleasure. It's just the thing that I identify with. Like, the thing that really got me obsessive about it was more his individual story. As, like, just kind of hard luck kid living in the middle of nowhere on Long Island. Like, if you live on Long Island, you are acutely aware that the biggest city in the world is less than an hour to the east. You're a train ride or a car ride from New York City. And you know that magnetism, that power that is in New York is right there. Sometimes you can see it. And you also know that they don't want you. You also know that you are an outsider. And you'll always be an outsider. You'll always be somebody from Long Island. And sort of the chip on your shoulder that you carry if you grow up in the shadow of a place like New York City or Los Angeles, you feel like there's something there that you want to be a part of, and yet you don't feel welcome. And I felt that way growing up. It wasn't until I started reading interviews where he talked about his upbringing and that sense of disconnect from the place he wanted to be that I really began to say, oh, like, it's cliche, but, like, dude, I've been hating all these years. We're not so different, you and I. Like, I realized, oh, Billy Joel and I are essentially the same person, but with a different skill set. He has a marketable skill set. I have a skill set that brings me to rooftops in the middle of Los Angeles to talk about projects I used to do. Right. So it's amazing, though. Like, the more I read about him, the more I... it was like watching a movie that you hadn't seen before. Like, I had never really studied the movie of Billy Joel's career. But through learning about him, I began to root for him. Like, as if I ignored the fact that I knew what the ending was, or the ending up to that point. Obviously, he's still with us, he's still performing, so his story's still being told. But the story of, like, him struggling, him getting ripped off by a record label, him getting signing possibly one of the worst contracts in the history of music, and having to basically have the mob get him out of that deal. Going through, like, having to really struggle just to sort of get to the starting point, and then have some success, have a record of the year, make some money, then get completely ripped off to the point where, oh, he's broke again. Like, he stopped recording new music in the early 90s, but continued to tour for a decade because he was broke, because he had to, because someone he trusted, robbed him. I had the same thing happen to me, obviously for less money, but, like,
right,
people I trusted, like, took money from me. And it was like every time I would read something about him, I could find some parallel. And the thing that it did for me was it helped me to sort of understand maybe where I handled adversity the wrong way, maybe where I turned my back on people out of anger. As I was doing this and reading about Long Island and reading about Long Island's favorite son, I missed Long Island a great deal.
I bet.
I really missed it. I had been living here for about 12 years at that point. So I was suddenly homesick. In the 12 years that I had lived in L.A., I had grown up. I went from being a kid to an adult, being married and, not living like in an apartment with four roommates. Just living somewhere with my wife and my dog. My dad had passed away. And between my dad's passing and just time, I felt disconnected from my own upbringing. So I the thing that I got out of this, in addition to becoming just really into the life of a musician, was, one, finally giving his music a chance. And like I said, it's good. It's way better than I gave him credit for. It's way better than I ever understood, and I think he is grossly underestimated as a musician. So that was a gift. That was something that I didn't expect, but also it made me go back home and connect and talk to family members I hadn't spoken to. It made me go to my high school reunion.
Really? You'd never been?
Never been. It just coincided with my 20th high school reunion, and I went.
Did they play Billy Joel?
They did. Yes, they did.
Because it's what you do.
Of course. And then I went to the diner afterwards, the same diner that I was once asked to leave for yelling at somebody for playing Piano Man. I went back to that diner, and I put on some Billy Joel songs on the jukebox.
There you go.
I sat with my wife, and we listened to Billy Joel on a Long Island jukebox, and I felt like, oh, I've made it all the way back home. Like, this is good. This is a really good thing. Now when I go home, I have a different relationship with my hometown. I feel a lot more warmth towards it. I can go home and not really be angry about things. Leave the past in the past and move forward. And
where did you start? Did you did you do it chronologically?
Yes. So I started the writing portion of the project with his first record, this thing called Cold Spring Harbor, which, of all of the Billy Joel records, it's the worst of them, but it's not entirely his fault. When the record was recorded, the producer, who also owned the label, who signed him to this terrible contract, basically a 20-year-old Billy Joel signed a contract saying that he owed this rinky-dink Long Island outlet 10 records. And the record company basically could control everything and got a big cut of everything. So Billy Joel basically signed his life away at 20, maybe 21, because nobody else was offering him anything. Columbia wasn't showing up at his house. Elektra wasn't looking for him. This local guy wanted to help him make records. All I got to do is sign a 10-record deal and give him a large percentage of my publishing? Great. Where do I sign? So he signed this horrible deal. Then, so his producer, a guy by the name of Artie Rip, who owned the record label, Artie Rip goes to master the record, and he does it at the wrong speed. Now, I don't know if you've ever mastered a record, but you probably understand how it works.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So, not funny if you are the guy who's put his life into this. So when I talk about, Billy Joel at this point does everything right, works hard, signs the deal that was given to him, says I'm gonna make the best of this, writes a good collection of songs for a 20, 21 year old. It's not a great record, but there's promise there. And it comes out, and because it's mastered at the wrong speed, his voice sounds really high, and the piano sounds like, basically take a piano, stick it in like an aluminum backyard shed, and then put a mic outside of that shed. That's what the record sounds like. So the label is this little rinky-dink operation. It's like, well, I ain't gonna pay to remaster this. Nobody's ever heard of this guy. Just put it out like this.
Oh my God.
So young Billy Joel gets the pressing of his first record, and it sounds like garbage. Like, it is, they later re-released it, they remastered it and re-released it about 10 years later. So the version of it you would buy now is the better version, where it sounds correct. But it's on YouTube. Go to YouTube, look up Cold Spring Harbor original mastering, and you don't recognize the voice. So Billy Joel hears this record and feels like, oh, my career is over. And so he just takes his band on the road, and it's like, well, I gotta earn a living. I can earn a living playing live shows. He builds a good reputation as a solid live act. And he's still working on new material. Columbia, somebody from Columbia sees him, and they approach him, and he's like, oh, I would love to sign with you guys. Dylan's on your label. Like, of course, this is where I want to be. But I'm under contract to these,
for the rest of my life,
to the point where, you know, of course, the reaction of Columbia was, who?
Like, right.
You have a 10-year deal with who? We'll take care of this. And allegedly, Columbia sent some muscle over
and
to
take care of it.
Basically, they worked out a deal where Family Productions, which was the name of this guy's company, got some sort of buyout, and they got a piece of each record. And for the first 10 records of Billy Joel's career, there's a Columbia logo and a Family Productions logo on it, because that was the deal. Yeah.
So if you're trying to get somebody into Billy Joel, even though you started at the top, where would you start them?
Regardless of the album, I would start with Deep Cuts. Pick up Piano Man, which was his first hit, and don't play Piano Man.
Okay, listen to everything else on the
album. Listen to everything but Piano Man. Listen to Travelin' Prayer, which is this great bluegrass song that, like, Dolly Parton recorded in 1999 and won a Grammy for. And if you listen to it, like Dolly sing it, you'd never know it wasn't her song.
Huh.
Listen to Travelin' Prayer. Listen to Stoppin' Nevada, which is about him and this woman that he's now going to get married to, them sort of heading west. And then if you do want to listen to Piano Man, the important thing to know about Piano Man is that everything he's telling you in the song Piano Man is based on true life events. And he swears, and I'm going to reveal here, he and I have spoken about this both on the phone and face to face. He swears to me that someone actually ordered a tonic and gin and also made love to his tonic and gin.
Was anyone a real estate novelist?
We'd never got into that.
Well.
How much time do you think I had?
On. Let's back up for a second.
Yes.
The part where you just said you got on the phone with him?
Yes.
And then met him for a
Yes.
Lunch.
So what happens is, I'm doing this year of Billy Joel through 2012. In September of 2012, it ends up, like, not on the Today Show, but on the Today Show blog, which they promote on the show.
Because the year you tracked it online,
yeah.
That's what you're saying. Did you write every day?
I wrote 4 days a week, 4 or 5 days a week. So, yeah, I should have talked about that. As it's going, I'm listening to every song, and I'm writing a little essay about every song. Some days it's 4 sentences, some days it's 2,000 words. Whatever comes to mind from the song. And as I'm writing about the songs, I'm also writing about myself. I'm talking about my family. And I'm talking about, like, being at my dad's house when I'm 7 years old. And, like, he and my mom have just separated. And it's really weird. And it's uncomfortable. And my dad puts on, like, this sad Billy Joel songs mixtape that he made. So I'm sitting in this basement apartment with my dad. And my dad's listening to Captain Jack, which is the saddest song imaginable. And as my dad's listening to Captain Jack, he's painting over the windows so that the sunlight can't get in.
Oh my God.
And, like, I realized, like, my parents had me really young. So when I'm 7, my dad is 25, 26 years old. So, like, my dad is about the same age Billy Joel is at that point. And, like, my dad feels like his life is over. So we're just sitting there listening to sad music while my dad is, like, blocking the life out of our home. And, like, just putting us in darkness. And I hadn't thought about that since I was a child. Like, I remember that night so vividly. Because all I wanted to do was watch the Mets. Because the Mets were going to be on. I was like, when can we watch the game? And he's like, when I'm done with this.
Like, as soon as I'm done shutting out everything good in our life, we can watch the Mets. And
oh my God.
Maybe we'll get pizza, too.
So it ends up on the Today Show thing. So it suddenly gets some, like, some other outlets pick it up. It was like a Huffington Post thing. So it got some press. So Billy has a publicist who gets clippings every day. And this is one he got. So it was billed as the headline, which is summed me up very well. Billy Joel hater changes his tune with year-long dedication. So
appropriate headline.
Yeah. So the publicist contacts me and was like, hey, I would love to talk to you about this. I'm like, oh yeah, no problem. I'm like, give me a call. So I don't think anything of it. So a week later, I'm driving home from work and my phone rings, unknown number, which I normally would just let it go to voicemail. But for some reason, I'm sitting in traffic. I got nowhere else to be. I pick up the phone and voice that sounds weirdly familiar. It's like, hey, can I talk to Will? I'm like, this is Will. He's like, hey, it's Billy Joel. And I'm like, come on. I won't say what I said because, you know, we're on a family type podcast
here. I'll
bleep it. But I'm like, get the f*** out of here. This is not Billy Joel. This is a friend of my dad's. This is somebody putting me on. So he's like, no, I talked to, and he gave me the publicist's name. He's like, I talked to so-and-so. She told me that, like, you're doing something about me and that we should go to lunch. Because throughout the course of the project, every time I finished an album, I would post an open letter inviting Billy Joel to lunch. I was like, hey, look, I'm making the effort here. I'm trying to make things good between us. And he's like, so what's this thing? And I was in the weird position where I needed to tell a famous musician that I do not like his work. Like, so I was like,
wow.
I was like, how much did your publicist tell you about what I'm doing? She's like, she said you had some like website, you were writing about me. I was like, but did she tell you like how it came about? And so I'm like, hang on one second. I'm like, Billy, I've got to pull over to tell you this. So I pull my car over to the side of the road and I'm like, here's the thing, I am not a fan. Like, never been a fan of your work. I'm like, and he's just sort of silent. He's like, hey, a lot of people, you know, after a moment of silence, he says, a lot of people aren't fans of my work. He's like, I can live with that. And I was like, but I'm giving it a try. And like, he was happy. It was like, oh, great. He's like, right. What are you up to? So I told him sort of where I was, and we started talking about the records.
Huh.
And we just talked and talked. And like, to the point where you're like, hey, Billy Joel's been great, but like, hey, I'm sure you gotta go. And he's like, don't worry about it. Like, he couldn't have been nicer. And like, he seemed to be more into talking to me about what I was doing. And like, we end up talking about like our families. And I'm talking about my dad who had passed away. And it was like, we had this great conversation. So finally, I'm like, Billy, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. I'm like, before we talk any further, you should read everything that I've written and then decide if you want to continue to talk to me. Because he was like, hey, we should talk again. Like, if you have questions, you can ask me. Like, I was so amazed at how receptive he was to me taking a critical analysis.
Sure.
With his work. After the project ended, he was like, hey, we're going to do that lunch. So he came to L.A. He was here for something. he was going to be out here. He was like, hey, I'm going to be out here if you want to like meet up. We met up. We had lunch. Had a great conversation about, you know, not just his music, but music in general.
Huh.
And like his, he talked to me about how he thought people perceived his music.
Oh, but that's
It was a really interesting conversation.
Well, that's because you're right in the middle of that.
Right.
I mean, I would say it. As an artist, I mean, and this is, none of this is really about me, but I do know that the one muscle that you have to use is to convince a stranger to like you.
Yeah. Well, I think there were two things. That, like, the fact that, wait, how come this guy doesn't like me? Like, he's got to win me over. Like, he got a little obsessed with this random dude liking him. But the other thing was, like, I wasn't asking him for anything.
Right.
Like, I didn't have a demo I wanted to listen to. I wasn't in a band. I wasn't trying to get anything from him. And I think because of that, he was willing to go further
than he maybe would have been with other people. Because I was like, hey, if you want to read this, I'd love to have you read this. But like, he read it all, and they called me. And he's like, hey, I just want to let you know I read everything. And he's like, it's great. He's like, I don't agree with everything you say, but I really like, I appreciate the thought, like the work you put into it. And he's like, he also made a lot of great points about stuff that I don't think people understand. Like, I had said something that resonated with him. And we had lunch, and then he invited my wife and I to go to the Hollywood Bowl, where we got to, you know, you've been to the Hollywood Bowl.
I have.
Hollywood Bowl's a beautiful place. It's a lot more beautiful when you're sitting right up front. Like, I've been to the Hollywood Bowl a number of times, and usually when I'm paying for the tickets, I'm sitting practically up in the hills. Like, I usually, like, I'm closer to a coyote than I am the stage. But we go to see the show, and I'm sitting right in that little sort of pit area with the tables and the millionaires.
Right.
So we're sitting basically in the 1% section. And it's nice. Like, we're 1% cosplaying. Like, hey, we're going to pretend we're fancy people for a day. Now, what none of the fancy people around know is that I took the bus to the show. Like, I took the bus. And it's like, I'm looking at this guy up on stage. Like, he was a bus taker. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's no reason. Like, he got lucky. He hit the lottery, you know, and he didn't get a gift. Like, he earned his seat, but like, he got lucky. Like, things could have very easily gone the other way. I watch him and I realize, like, he could just as easily be sitting on the bus with me, and we're here seeing somebody else. So it was a very much like, again, it's an identity. So like, I ended up wanting to listen to somebody's music to see what it was that sort of brought people into it. And I realized it's a combination of, one, as I said, songs are better than I gave them credit for, especially the deep cuts. Deep cuts are way better than people understand. And the person, and the fact that, oh, more than any other, more than almost any other sort of hugely popular musician, like, he could really be any one of us. Like, the appeal of Springsteen, who I love, is that everybody feels like Springsteen's a guy you can go have a beer with. Billy Joel is also a guy you can go have a beer with. Just, he'll tell you this, don't let him drive you home.
That's awesome.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Chapter 2. In every episode of Geekin' Out, I see if I can trade one thing I've discovered with one thing that my guest has discovered. A friendly exchange. I call it Trade Ya.
This segment, as I'm eating some banana chips here, is called Trade Ya.
Okay.
And the idea is, much like you have told me what your passion is or your obsession is, what you're geeking out on, this is just something very kind of within your week, within your month. Something that you're into and one thing that I'm into, and I'll trade you one thing for another thing.
Okay.
So for me, I'll start so you can have a second to think about it.
Give me a moment.
During our conversation, I just heard you say that you have a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Right? I have a Mets podcast called Flushing Transit Authority, which I do with my friend Jay Bushman, and it's a ton of fun. We like talking about... Basically, he and I love talking about the Mets, so we're like, hey, if we're going to talk about the Mets, let's record it and make other people listen to it.
So this is my first experience in podcasting, and I own a recording studio and stuff, so I know all of the things I should be doing to make it awesome from an audio standpoint. But what I've discovered is one of the things that's actually sitting in front of us is this microphone right here. It's an Apogee microphone, and this is the same converter in the bottom of this tiny little microphone that I use to record albums that win awards. And it's somehow, instead of having it in a giant rack, they put it in this tiny little microphone. And it'll plug into your phone, or it'll plug into your computer, anything. And secondly, to up it, there is a Kickstarter thing with these guys in Canada that is, they call it the eyeball, and it goes on top of this. And suddenly, you have an entire recording studio that it really will squish down like a Nerf ball into your bag.
That is amazing. You know what I'm obsessed with lately? I love Neil Young.
You're a big Neil Young fan.
I love Neil Young.
Does that mean that you bought like a Pono player?
I did not buy a Pono player because I also realized that your average listener, which I am, can't tell the difference.
Got it.
And unless you have, like, I'm listening
unless
to music.
Unless you have Neil Young's dope.
Right.
You can't tell the difference.
I'm listening to music in my car, or I'm listening with earbuds on. My iPhone or my home, you know, record player with a USB speaker is going to be fine. So the thing that I'm obsessed with right now, Neil Young put out a record this week called Hitchhiker.
Oh.
Hitchhiker was recorded in 1976. And I learned about Hitchhiker through my friend Daniel Ralston, who just published a great story in Vulture this week, just, you know, pop culture site, about the making of this record. So the record was Neil Young, his producer David Briggs, who produced all of his best stuff, and Dean Stockwell. Do you remember Dean Stockwell?
From Quantum Leap?
Dean Stockwell from Quantum
Wait
Leap.
Wait a minute, the actor?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Dean Stockwell was also a musician. Dean Stockwell was a Renaissance man of the 20th century. Dean Stockwell does not play on the record. He's just there in the room. And but the record is just Neil Young and an acoustic guitar doing the first version of Pocahontas, the first version of Powderfinger.
Wow.
And a bunch of like other stuff that Captain Kennedy, like a bunch of stuff that you've heard him do on other records or he pulls out live every now and then. But just to hear like Powderfinger just on an acoustic guitar is like the beauty of, I love Powderfinger. It's one of my five favorite songs ever recorded. And just that sort of, that harmonic guitar sound and that sort of really just slushy riff that he does on the electric, and to not hear that, as my friend Daniel points out, like makes the narrator of the song feel even frailer and more afraid than he is in the electric version.
1976.
Yeah. So 2 years, so, 3 years before it came out on Rust Never Sleeps.
Wow. Okay, I will totally go listen to that.
Fantastic.
I put Neil Young's guitar playing as one of the things that really inspires me because it's more right hand than left hand.
It's so sort of like, it's just so primal.
Yeah, I love it. That's awesome. Well, thanks for being here, or thanks for joining us on the roof.
Always happy to be on a roof. Good to be had.
Chapter 3, me geeking out on music. Piano Man. I would like to discuss piano playing front men and women. We're all used to seeing our singers stand and perform at a microphone, and some mics with diamonds on them, some with scarves or tambourines hanging down, and some even twirling or swinging the stands around like they're weapons. We also have stars that commonly wield guitars as they sing, whether they're rock and roll battle axes or hipster ukuleles or wooden steel string country artists. We're all accustomed to our rock stars performing certain duties a certain way. As a culture, we really don't stray too much from this model. Yes, there are a few that play violin and a rare saxophone here or there, even a drummer like Phil Collins or Sheila E. or even Cowboy Mouth. But I've noticed something odd about our rock stars. There are very few that play piano. In 1919, Steinway & Sons launched an ad campaign for their pianos, and the tagline was, "The Instrument of the Immortals." So let's think about that. Let's see what's on the top of my mind. Fats Domino, Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, all built rock and roll on pianos. And then my mind, I think of Elton John and Billy Joel and Jules Holland from The Squeeze. Then I think I skip ahead maybe in my mind to Ben Folds and then Lady Gaga and Sarah Bareilles. And then it feels like they're more like that old TV show, The Highlander, that there can be only one. Piano rock stars are things that we love, but it seems that we don't have a lot of room for them on our pop charts. Great for rhythm and blues, great for songwriter, but what about the piano makes it a hard sell for a rock and roller? Why? Is this just harder to carry your piano to a campfire at a remote beach to serenade the girl that you like? Harder to carry up a flight of stairs for an open mic? It doesn't go well with tight pants? Maybe it's baked into our learning. By default, when we take a piano lesson, we learn chopsticks. Versus on a guitar, we learn Deep Purple's Smoke on the Water. Maybe it's our history in the 50s and 60s as teenagers became purchasers. Fats Domino was playing Tutti Frutti versus Chuck Berry playing Johnny B. Good. Is that when we turned? Maybe in our subconscious, it's that we feel that a piano just can't get loud enough to drown out the cheers of an arena and command the masses. Whatever it is, as a guitar player, I'm always fascinated watching my brother play things with keys on it. Fascinated hearing Elton John effortlessly land a song on its feet every time it tumbles out of a speaker. Fascinated at how Billy Joel sounds like a drummer and a bass player and a guitar player all at the same time on the same instrument. I hope someone new out there feels like taking us for a ride soon on their imagination using their piano. And I hope it feels like freedom and rock and power and awesome. Long live rock stars who play piano. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Geeking Out, and we are already hard at work on the next one. Are you obsessed with something amazing? Want to tell us about it? Write to us at geekingoutwithkb@gmail.com, and you might be a guest on an upcoming episode. Come find out more about me and this podcast at christianbush.com, Christian with a K, people. Follow me at Christian Bush on Twitter, Christian Bush on Instagram, Christian Bush on Facebook, and Christian M. Bush on Snapchat. Thanks to Bobby Bones for the opportunity to make this podcast, Brandon Bush for making the soundtrack and assembling the pieces, Tom Tapley for audio wizardry, and Whitney Pastrick for being a great producer and making this whole thing possible. This is Christian Bush, geeking out. Thank you for listening.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.